This episode of the Children's Literature Podcast is brought to you by PBJ Sandwiches. PBJ Sandwiches. Get her done. Welcome to the Children's Literature Podcast. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. This episode is called The Monster at the End of the Best Book Ever. The Monster at the End of This Book, starring your furry old pal Grover, is the best picture book that has ever been written for children. Ever. You've been listening to the Children's Literature Podcast. Please subscribe. Okay, I should probably elaborate a little bit first. I'm not kidding, though. In terms of visual design, use of language, and the crazy amount of fun this book is to read over and over again, you can't do better than The Monster at the End of This Book, starring lovable, furry old Grover. It was first published in 1971 and was written by John Stone, who was part of the original team that created the TV show Sesame Street in 1969. He directed more than 200 full episodes of Sesame Street, in addition to writing and directing many segments for the show and its related media. Without him, we wouldn't have characters like Oscar the Grouch, Cookie Monster, and Big Bird. 13 million copies of this book have been sold during its 50 years in print. I loved it when I was a little kid. I still love it now, and my kids love it too. But what is it about this story that gives it such staying power? I'll tell you in a moment. But first, I wanted to thank listeners who wrote in with such kind things to say about last week's episode and the video that went along with it. The Crow and the Pitcher has always been my favorite one of Aesop's fables, not just because it has a great moral, when things get tough, think creatively, but also because it's a simple, elegant way to teach about the displacement of water. I was pleased to hear that you enjoyed the video version of the fable that my daughter and I made together. I hope it'll be a fun resource for parents, homeschoolers, and teachers of science and literature. I plan to use my new YouTube channel to host videos that go along with episodes, or I may perhaps convert some episodes to video format if that makes sense. You can find a link to my YouTube channel on the sidebar at childrensliteraturepodcast.com. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any of the fun. In The Monster at the End of This Book, the ingenious storytelling starts right on the title page. In most books, the title page is something to skip past, a meaningless blurb that the lawyers stuffed in there to make sure everyone gets paid. But the author recognized that this is an opportunity for a great joke instead of just wasted space. The title page and copyright information are fully illustrated, and a rather unimpressed Grover stands beneath it, pulling up the corner of the page while saying, "This is a very dull page. I wonder what is on the next page." However, Grover does a massive double take when you do turn the page. "Did that say there will be a monster at the end of this book?" he shrieks, absolutely horrified. He then begs the reader not to turn any more pages, thus saving him from the monster. Of course, pages are turned and things escalate. Grover tries using rope, nails, and a brick wall, but of course these are no match for a little kid turning pages of a book. At last, Grover is exhausted, terrified, and defeated. But he sees that the monster at the end of the book is him. Lovable, furry old Grover is the monster at the end of this book. What makes this story so good is that the act of reading it becomes a performance involving the child. Grover asks questions, begs, pleads, shouts, and negotiates, all directly with the reader. In theater and television, this is called breaking the fourth wall, a reference to the invisible wall that separates an audience from the people performing on stage. Normally, actors in a show behave as if the audience doesn't exist, but sometimes a character will directly address the people watching. This isn't a modern technique. In ancient Greece, the chorus would often act as a narrator, directly speaking to the audience and commenting on the choices made by the characters in the play. Sesame Street breaks the fourth wall almost constantly, with Muppets and human characters addressing viewers as if there is nothing separating them. So it's very much in character for Grover to speak directly to the children reading The Monster at the end of this book. I probably shouldn't be using the term breaking the fourth wall, because this book is more written as if the fourth wall doesn't even exist. Most of the time, the fourth wall is there in a television show, play, or movie, with characters living in their own little world. When a character does break through, it's only occasionally. This is what happens in plays like Shakespeare's Richard III. In between scenes of the play, the villainous king steps aside to tell the audience all about his evil plans. You also see this in musicals like Joseph in the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, where the only character who can see and speak to the audience is the narrator. But in The Monster at the end of this book, Grover is the only character in the story, and he only speaks to the audience. This isn't a story, it's a conversation. A private audience with your furry old pal Grover, in the same way as stand-up comedy. This direct communication feels a lot more special to a child than reading an ordinary book where the characters don't even know he or she exists. The monster at the end of this book also makes the act of holding and manipulating the pages of a book part of the story. There are other great books that do this. I'm quite fond of Press Here by Hervé Toulet, which begins with a colored circle and the words Press Here written beneath. The reader presses the circle, and more appear. On each page, children are invited to rotate the book, shake it, and tap it. The following page shows circles which have apparently been affected by the reader's actions. It's more of an experience than a story, as there are no characters and no plot. But Press Here pulls the same trick as The Monster at the end of this book. It compels you to turn the pages. The motives might be different. Kids turn the pages of Press Here because their curiosity is gently encouraged, and they turn the pages of The Monster at the end of this book because they want to see Grover freak out. But turn the pages they will. The Monster at the end of this book also reminds me of another interactive book that I really like, and that's The Book with No Pictures by BJ Novak. As the title suggests, there are no pictures. Instead, the words in the book force grown-ups to humiliate themselves by reading the very silly words on the pages. Any adult who reads this book to a child will be forced to say things like blork, blurf, and my only friend in the whole wide world is a hippo named Boo Boo Butt. This happens because at the beginning of the book, the words reveal something we all take for granted. Quote, here is how books work. Everything the words say, the person reading the book has to say, no matter what. End quote. Most authors don't even think about this fact, let alone entertain the idea of teasing readers by writing silly words simply so they must be uttered. In The Book with No Pictures, readers are forced to say whatever is on the page. The monster at the end of this book takes the opposite approach, forcing the character to experience the plot of a story because a reader is reading it. The humor unfolds from the fact that Grover is somehow aware of how books work, and he tries to resist his fate. It's not surprising to me that John Stone and BJ Novak both had careers in comedy television before writing a children's book. Novak rose to fame as a writer, producer, and actor on the American version of The Office, just as Stone was a writer, producer, and actor on Sesame Street. Both shows feature outrageous characters, a lot of laughs, and fourth wall breaks. This comic timing and visual humor that draws so many laughs on television translates quite well to interactive picture books. TV shows, like picture books, are short enough that you're meant to enjoy them in one sitting. Both of these authors decided to impose on the reader, treating their stories like a bit of a roller coaster. Hop on, strap in, and enjoy the ride, but you can't get off until it's over. I'm very fond of the book with no pictures because it gives adults the chance to be playful, proving that they're not too proud to humiliate themselves so children can have a good laugh. Grover does the same thing. As a Muppet, it's his job to humiliate himself so children can have a good laugh. I don't like to make it a competition between these two books, but I do have to say that The Monster at the End of This Book takes first place for me, because while it's fun for a child to be a spectator to a grown-up being silly, it's even better for a child to be the one in charge of the fun. When a child picks up The Monster at the End of This Book, he or she is in absolute control. Each reader can decide whether to turn the pages fast, like ripping off a Band-Aid, or go slowly so the tension can build. Adults should play their part in all this, showing whatever exaggerated emotions go best with the child's choices. The important thing is that Grover is tormented as much as possible, and that children enjoy the power trip. Kids spend most of their days being bossed around all the time, so it's important to let them savor moments of autonomy when they can have them. Over the years, Grover has fallen from great and low heights, tripped over things, smashed through walls, been shot out of a cannon, and had heavy objects dropped on his head. And all this is hilarious because he's a Muppet. We're meant to laugh at his spasms of agony, just as we're meant to laugh at any other clown. But Grover isn't just a punching bag. His Sesame Street sketches are usually funny because he's been incompetent or fails to understand something. But Grover is good-natured, friendly, and at least tries to be helpful. And, as he points out, he's cute, too. So even though kids get a good laugh out of watching him have a hard time, they're still fond of him. The humor in The Monster at the End of This Book comes from Grover's usual flaw. He misunderstands who the monster is and freaks out for no reason. The book is aware of this. The reader is aware of this. And at the end, when Grover becomes aware, we even get to enjoy his embarrassment. It's the classic routine of a clownish comedian. And like any good comedian, Grover follows what's called the rule of three in this book. For some reason, stories are more interesting and jokes are more funny when they're assembled with three parts. And Grover's efforts to obstruct pages from being turned use this pattern nicely. He starts by tying the pages together, then nailing them, then building a brick wall. And of course, because these things are just images on paper, it's no trouble at all to turn the page. When reading this book to children, I've found that I get the biggest laugh from kids by letting them turn the pages on their own. But if they ask me to do it, I pretend I'm not strong enough to get through Grover's fortifications. I ask for help, which makes the kid feel superior not just to Grover, but to me as well when they break through. The Monster at the End of This Book has been a family favorite for half a century because of its perfect story structure, excellent use of color and fonts to express Grover's emotions in his speech bubbles, and the way it lets kids be in complete control for a few minutes. It also delivers nonstop laughs. While Grover experiences agony over and over again every time this book is read, we all know that in the end he comes to no harm at all. I wasn't kidding at the beginning of this episode when I said I think this is the best illustrated children's book ever. The Monster at the End of This Book will remain a much-loved and much-read book for a very long time, and Grover will be ready to be tormented by many future generations of little monsters and their parents. You've been listening to the Children's Literature Podcast. Please subscribe and give the show a rating. Send comments to letters@childrensliteraturepodcast.com. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. Thanks for listening.